everyone, this is Lauren.
And this is Anastasia.
You're listening to Wait to Panic, a podcast where two friends take turns trying to scare one another shitless. This week, it's Anastasia's turn. And wow, I really did commit to that whole, I'm just going to sing the intro every time.
You did. You really did. Like, the happy bubble popping.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it's not really a scary one this week. Well, I don't know.
Okay.
But I hope it's a fitting one to end our first season on.
It's very mystic and vague. So, it okay, is. This should be fun.
Yeah. So, let's start with some happies.
Happies. I actually have some this week. Like, I came prepared. Nice. I did my homework.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
I know. Aren't you proud of me? I need you to be proud of me.
Happiness is no homework, but yes.
Okay, that's what you say. Some of us are very busy. And I know that you're one of them.
Yeah. Finding the little things in everyday, Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my bullshit, like, power of positivity statement for the year.
Have you been reading the motivational things on Facebook again?
No.
Yeah, well. Okay, so tangent aside, my happy is that last weekend was my birthday, and today I may have bought myself a birthday present. So
just one?
Just one. Rory got me plenty of others, so I was very well taken care of day of. He got me some awesome gifts, including a mug that says I'm tired with the depleted battery on it.
Oh, that is a good one.
Isn't that perfect?
I mean, it's depressing, but it's good.
It's my catchphrase. I say it the most out of anything I say during the day.
Yeah, accurate. And also, yeah. I want to take a nap.
Yes. And then he also got me the Michelle McNamara book of Finding the Golden State Killer. Also perfect.
Yeah.
And he got me a mandolin book. And then my gift to myself was kind of related to the mandolin book, which I bought myself an electric mandolin. So I can stop renting, and I can do stuff with an amp and play some weird, funky jazz mandolin, and I'm very excited.
I did not know they
existed.
Electric, yeah.
Yeah, so that should be here in a few weeks, and I'm very excited.
Well, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Dance, dance, dance. Happy dance.
Do the happy dance.
How about you? What's your happy?
My happy, I can finally say, like, officially, that I have accepted a new position at work.
Woohoo!
And I am both excited and a little nervous for it because it's me. And unless I'm already, like, 100% doing the job already, I just will never feel ready for it. But that's also not realistic.
So I have one correction for you.
Uh-huh.
You accepted a promotion at work.
Yes.
Not a new position, a promotion, which happens to be a new position, but yes. It is important. Promotion.
Yes.
Yay, yes. Promotion.
Yeah. And also, we are, like, so close to being moved in to our new house, and it's going to be so nice not having neighbors having fight and or intimate moments overhead at 2 a.m.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah, like, they're not quiet.
Angry makeup intimate moments?
Undecided. But
I appreciate that our home is very well soundproofed right now.
Yeah.
We hear nothing from the neighbors. Nothing.
Okay, I was going to say, that's going to go one of two ways, sir, Lauren.
Yeah, no, we never hear anything. I was not making a comment on me and Rory. No, only commenting on not being interrupted at 2 a.m. from my sleep that I value very much with odd noises. The most we get is pigeons hooting about. Just
as they do.
Churring away.
Those are my happies for today.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So, with that in mind, do you want to hear a story?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, since we're wrapping up our first year, I wanted to find something that was, you know, appropriately fitting and spooky or terrifying, and I don't know if I did, but it is interesting And I have Blake to thank for it. He was actually the one who found it when I sent him, like, a panic, like, oh my god, I still have to find a story. And it's Thursday night, and we're recording tomorrow. And so yeah, he actually found this, and it sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole.
Awesome. But, I like weird shit.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Mary Catherine Olachuk?
I have not.
Cool. So what do you know about Maine?
Literally nothing other than it has a place called Portland and they like lobster.
Good. Good. Okay. Yeah. The lobster plays a very, very brief role.
Oh, okay. So I know something about the story. Woohoo.
You do. So this all takes place in Maine, USA. And for full disclosure, I am also in the same category as you, where outside of a Stephen King novel, I've never really heard any murders or mysteries in Maine until this. And the further I got into researching, I was like, why don't people go around answering, like, murder and mystery to what's your hometown best known for?
Oh, God.
Yeah, because I don't know what's going on with you, Maine, but you got some secrets and skeletons in those closets.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta open up. Be like Washington, at least Western Washington. When people ask what we're about, rain and murder.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of weird shit going on. And Sasquatch.
And weed. We have a lot of weed now. And beer. We have a lot going on.
And coffee. We got a lot. But murder is definitely on the list when people ask questions. Gotta own it, Maine. Gotta give the warning to anyone moving there.
You might meet a serial killer. We've had a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna go to Maine here in the U.S. And in this story, we have an unsolved murder. So there's no answer at the end of all this. Sorry. Oh. But yay, we get to wildly speculate.
Woohoo! So. Wild speculation is my sweet yay spot.
More murder.
Oh my god.
And a shady government program.
Oh, no wonder Blake found it.
Yep.
Conspiracies.
So, yeah, I don't know if there's anything else a girl could ask for but murder, murder, and sneaky governments. But
aliens?
Yeah.
Dinosaurs?
I mean, I'm not big on aliens. I do like dinosaurs. But yeah, my little parenthesis note under what more could a girl ask for is, in Mary's case, it would be not getting kidnapped and murdered. And oh, I'm really sorry, Mary. But my next note was, morbid humor is how I cope, and these stories stress me out.
That is 1,000% what it is. This entire really podcast is our coping mechanism for trying to, like, laugh through the pain of the existence of being a female in the United States. Like,
but we have probably to laugh because we're uncomfortable with it.
Yep.
And yep, that's just our defense mechanism, is to laugh and be like, oh god, I can't believe this is happening.
And then to make really horrible jokes.
Yeah, again, I never said they were good coping mechanisms, but they are.
They are mechanisms.
They are mechanisms. So, yep, Mary Catherine Olachuk. So, we'll just hop dive right into in this.
Do
dive
it.
Dive on in. On Sunday, August 9th of 1970, Mary Olachuk was at the beach with her family, which was just down the street from their summer cottage, how fancy, on Israel Head Road in Ogunquit, Ogunquit, Maine. She was 13 years old, and she was the youngest of three girls. Her sisters were Nancy and Jane.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, she was not very old. So, Ogunquit is one of Maine's more popular summer destinations, both for the locals, which for the rest of the year, there's like a couple hundred of them that live there. But during the summer, when it warms up, the tourists flock in, and I think they said the population can grow up to, like, 100,000.
Holy so, cannoli.
A lot of people coming in. And it wasn't really any different in the 1970s. But the Olenchucks, they had a 7-room summer cottage there in town where they would come stay every summer. Now, just down the road, less than 200 yards from their summer cottage, is the Lookout Hotel. And that is kind of there in the heart of town. And really, this whole town is like your typical picturesque small town Maine feel, but with some murder.
I'm basically just imagining like Port Townsend, Washington, but on the coast of Maine.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Because, yeah.
Yeah.
I need a visual.
Yeah. Like, it's got beaches that are nicer than ours. Hopefully warmer water. I don't know.
I don't know.
But at around 7 p.m. that Sunday afternoon, Mary left the beach ahead of her mother and her two sisters for a solo trip into town. She wanted to go pick up the Sunday edition of the New York Times and a pack of gum, which is kind of adorable. And she briefly stopped at home to change out of her beach clothes, and she was last seen wearing a pair of pink faded shorts and a long white t-shirt with the words Yokomiko Andrews AFB, or Air Force Base, printed on the front of it. Her dad was a military guy. In fact, her father was Army Brigadier General and commanding officer of the Army Ammunition Supply Depot, Brigadier General Peter Olenchuk.
Damn.
We'll get into that in a minute. But instead of walking the very short distance from their house to the store, which wasn't more than maybe half a mile, Mary went to their neighbor's yard and borrowed a bike that they kept there in the backyard. She didn't go, like, steal this bike. Like, there's an agreement with the family friends next door that she could borrow it when she needed it.
That's nice.
Yeah. So she went into town, stopped at a drugstore, she bought her some penny candy, and then went to the Norseman Motor Inn, which carried out-of-state newspapers, which is where she got her New York Times that she was looking for.
Very well-read 13-year-old. Maybe it was different in the 70s, but
bring it back.
Well done.
Yeah. So she was just 5'3" and weighed maybe 80 pounds, but she had shoulder-length red hair and was very well known by all the locals. She was described as being very cheerful, and she was always accompanied by her family companion, the Irish setter that her family owned.
Oh, I love her. Oh.
Yeah, she sounds like an adorable child. I don't say that about many children, but
yes,
she sounds adorable. So Brenda Blake was the owner of the Marginal Way House, and she was one of the last people who saw Mary alive. And she said that, "I remember vividly, very vividly, waving to her that day. She was headed home. She was almost there, about maybe 200 yards from her front door, when she stopped outside the Lookout Hotel. There was a woman on the third floor of the hotel that reported seeing a red-haired girl on a bicycle speaking to a man in a maroon car. She told police that she turned away from the window briefly, and when she looked back, the girl was getting into the car, and the car had scratches on the hood that she could see. Fast forward a couple hours. At 7:15 p.m. that night, Mary was reported missing by her mother. The bicycle that she had borrowed from the neighbor was found later in an alcove there at the Lookout Hotel. Given the possibility that their daughter had been kidnapped, the Olenchucks were expecting a ransom demand, but 2 days went by with no word, nothing, no contact.
That's weird.
Yeah, very, very weird. And I'm not really sure why they didn't go take action right away and just wait.
Like,
they literally just sat and waited to see if...
The 70s were a wild time.
Yeah. So yeah, they just sat on it for 2 days. Like, they obviously notified the police and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't take any action on it. until the 2 days went by, and then they decided with the police to take it to the public for help. And so when they didn't get any ransom demand, any phone call, letter, note slipped under a door, anything, they started putting out flyers that had Mary's picture on it throughout the coastal York County. The U.S. military, the FBI, the state, and local police all got involved in the effort to find Mary. Their search focused on this maroon car with a scratched-up hood and the driver, who was described by the woman at the hotel who saw her getting in the car as a white man, probably in his 30s, and, quote, not a hippie.
Okay, so he had a high end tight. That's what that tells me.
Possibly, yeah. I just put, note, gotta love the 70s.
Yep.
So the family members, they told police that Mary was shy and wasn't really a super trusting child. She was described as not exceedingly trustful. So I would imagine.
Okay, so logically wary. Got it.
Yes. And even her father, Peter, said that Mary would not have talked to the man or gotten in the car unless she, quote, had confidence in the individual or knew him.
Hmm.
Which doesn't bode well.
I mean, you did make the comment that the locals knew her well.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So start your speculations now, folks.
The juices are flowing.
Yeah. So the police now believe that Mary did know the man, and they regret that they'd taken so much time initially looking for this mysterious maroon car. Lieutenant McDonough, he said, today in missing children cases, you start with the immediate family and you work out from there. You try to learn everything you can about the children's daily activities, who they associate with, who the family associated with, so on and so forth.
Hmm.
And they were not quite on the ball as quickly as they should have been for this. So by August 15th, more than 1,000 posters that had Mary's face on it had been distributed from the Canadian border all the way south to Delaware.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a lot of speculation about who could have possibly kidnapped her. And again, I have my own thoughts, but I'll get into that at the end. So first, we're going to delve into some shady government stuff.
Okay.
So August 7th, 2 days before Mary disappeared, her father, Brigadier General Peter Olenchuk, was in Maryland. He had just been put in charge of Operation Chase, which stands, makes me laugh. Not as much as Bluebird, but Chase stands for Cut Holes and Sink 'em.
Okay.
It was a 3-year-old army program designed to dump unwanted material at sea.
Oh, dear good God.
Mm-hmm. And as you can guess, it's not just any old unwanted material.
Is it biohazard or is it like bodies or...
Worse. So the general was overseeing the transport of nerve gas from bases in the South to a ship docked in Florida. Chase was an ocean disposal program where chemical weapons were loaded onto ships to be dumped in various ocean locations.
What the fuck?
Yep. So from globalsecurity.org, the dumping of chemical weapons was highly controversial, rightly so. The first chemical sinking was designated Chase 8 in 1967 and disposed of mustard agent in ton containers and M55 GB-filled rockets. In June 1968, Chase 11 disposed of GB and VX in ton containers as well as rockets. Chase 12, in August 1968, disposed of mustard agent in ton containers. And last was Chase 10, which had been delayed for various reasons, but was finally completed in August of 1970. And it disposed of 3,000 tons of nerve agent rockets that were encased in concrete vaults. Environmental concerns over sea dumping of chemical weapons led to public law Marine Protection Research and Sanctuaries Act of 1972, or MPRSA, which prohibited missions like this.
Thank God. I was about to say, do they not realize that literally all life comes from the oceans, and that if you put things in the oceans, you're basically killing the Earth? Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Hindsight's 2020. Which is funny to say that in 2021.
I'm telling you, I think it was a time traveler that coined that phrase. It was nothing about vision. They were talking about the year.
I don't disagree. So, as you might guess, the entire Chase project, it had some pretty high-profile protests against it. Yeah. Everyone from politicians to environmentalists that were, again, rightfully so, against it. And on August 8th, the day before Mary disappeared, a radical student group told a Kentucky newspaper that it would start kidnapping the families of those involved in Operation Chase.
Okay, well, that's shady as all hell.
Told ya.
Like, yeah, I disagree with what they're doing, but don't go kidnapping kids.
I mean, you literally just did a story where a girl got kidnapped because of her family.
Yeah.
So.
I know.
People do that kind of thing, and it's but stupid. But it's
so messed up every time.
It is. Yep. So, on August 20th, Brigadier General Olenchuk said that it was one of the few times he actually spoke about this. He only spoke about it twice, to be exact.
Wow.
He said that he was chosen for the nerve gas assignment because of his training in chemical warfare, and he doubted very strongly that Mary's abduction was linked at all to his work. Police were never actually able to link the two together either, so they did drop that angle. And the only other time that the family spoke of Mary's murder was during a very, very brief phone interview in 1971. And that was the last that they publicly spoke of it.
I mean, that's surprising to me as well. Maybe it was just not standard practice for parents of kids to, like, be speaking out, but I don't know. I feel like that's pretty normal nowadays, so maybe it was a learning curve.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to think that maybe they were just a very private family.
Yeah.
And since he was such a high-profile military person, but I don't know. It was also a little suspicious to me that they just never publicly, at least, acknowledged it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do personally doubt that Mary knew anything about her dad's work, or that...
Oh, yeah.
That she could have been kidnapped because she might have known something. Yeah, kids are nosy little creatures, but I doubt she knew anything of value to the extent that made it worth kidnapping her.
Yeah, I doubt that she would know anything about it. The only, like, if someone knew that her dad was involved, I feel like they could take her purely because her dad was involved, not because she might know something.
Yeah, but then the lack of ransom note or anything just makes it true. Very strange.
Like, you would think that they would have, like, terms if that was the case.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, that was my only rationale, was that her father's assignment could have contributed to her kidnapping, and she may have been identified if someone didn't know immediately who she was, like a local, because she was wearing the shirt that said that base on it.
True.
But I don't know. Again, okay. Speculation. But to the next part of the story, which is rather unfortunate, and you're also going to feel sorry for Bob. So 16-year-old Bob Walsh, he was a part-time lifeguard in Kennebunk, I believe was also in Maine, Kennebunk, Maine, was one of those who volunteered to go put out posters of Mary. His family owned the Idolese Motel in Kennebunk, and at the time when he was helping, he knew nothing about the case other than a young girl was missing. Or at least that's what he thought. On the night that Mary disappeared, Bob and a friend were being typical teenagers, and they were having a good time. They were out drinking a few beers and fishing for striped bass on the Musam River in Kennebunk, and they were out fairly late into the night, and just after midnight it started to rain, so they packed up their fishing gear and started walking back to their their hangout slash where they stored all their gear and whatnot, which was an old barn in a field on the Parsons estate, which was near Bob's family motel. So it took them a little while to get to the barn, and at about 1:30 in the morning, as they approached the barn, they heard this, what they described as a very strange rustling in the woods nearby, and they were both pretty creeped out by it, but figured, you know, maybe it's a deer moving around in the wood or some other kind of animal. But Bob makes the mistake of looking back as they leave the barn. And again, I have speculation about this too. But yeah, they drop off their fishing poles and their sleeping bags and walk back to the Idleys Inn or hotel or motel, whatever it is. And again, as they leave, Bob throws a look back at the woods because he still heard something. Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound right. But they get back to the motel, briefly jump in the pool.
Sure, why not?
But whatever. and then they hear a car start up in the distance. By this time, it's about 2 a.m. And it's not, like, the inn motel, it's not, like, in town, necessarily. Uh-huh. So, from how it's described, it kind of, I imagine that the pool is kind of facing the road or had a sight line in and out of it, which led to their witness accounts.
Go to bear.
Coda's got some woofs.
And some grumbles.
She sleep Coda fights things.
Oh, okay.
She's still passed out. She's just grumbling at things.
She's just grumbling. Yeah. So the boys were able to give some eyewitness account of this. And so Bob said when he was being interviewed, "I remember it like it was yesterday. The car pulled up slowly to the intersection near the motel and stopped. Lights on, engine idling, and finally it turned onto Route 9 and drove away slowly."
That's really weird.
Really weird. So when Mary's body was found in the barn 13 days later, Bob told his story to Frank Stevens, who was Kennebunk's police chief. He also told Stevens that he'd been in the barn a half dozen times since that night and once smelled something so putrid that he got sick to his stomach. Stevens, the police chief, who has since passed on, told Bob to write down everything he could remember about his activities between August 9th and August 22nd. He also told the boy that a Bible from the Idleys Motel had been found in the barn, to which Bob said, "I knew the Bible was there. It had been there for about a year. A girl who stayed at the motel used to go to the barn and read it."
Mm.
Kind of weird, but whatever. Unfortunately for Bob, word kind of got out that Bob would spend time in the barn and that a Bible from his family motel had been recovered near the body. And so people in town started to talk. So he was never seriously considered a suspect. He didn't have a car at the time, didn't have a driver's license, he easily passed lie detector tests, but it didn't save him from becoming basically a social outcast. Which, I feel bad for Bob.
Because he was with another kid!
He was with another kid, and he seems like he's a nice guy who's rightfully a little bitter about this.
Yeah.
But also, if the original eyewitness account from the lady at the Lookout Hotel was correct, Mary was taken by a man in his 30s, and Bob being a teenager, there was no way he could have even remotely passed for a 30-year-old man, but small-town gossip is a real bitch.
Well, I'd bet you cash money that a teenager wouldn't get described as not a hippie.
No. Probably not. So, Bob, the previous spring, he had been elected class president at Kennebunk High School. But, unfortunately, when school started that September, everything had kind of changed for him. His girlfriend dumped him, his classmates started keeping their distance from him, and he earned a nickname that haunts him even to this day of Killer Bob.
Oh my god, poor Bob.
Poor Bob. He still lives in Kennebunk, and he runs a catering business. And,
bold move.
Yeah. He said, it's something that's never gone away. If they ever catch this person, I'm going to have the biggest party this town's ever seen. And I'm going to invite all the morons who ever said anything like this to me. So I was like, you know what, Bob? Power move there.
I like him.
Yeah.
He knows how to do things.
He knows how to do it. So the week before Mary's body was discovered in the barn, one of her aunts contacted a psychic, and not just any psychic, Shirley Harrison. She was a mother of six from West Buxton, and she had actually consulted on several high-profile murder investigations, and you've heard of the Boston Strangler, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. She predicted the location and occupation of the Boston Strangler's next victim.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. So on August 15th, Shirley Harrison, she told police to check a, quote, unpainted building on an old estate in the Kennebunk area. She said that Mary was deceased and her body would be found in that building. Seven days later, Mary's body was found by George LaBarge, who worked in the summer as a police officer in Kennebunk. He had gone to the barn on the Parsons estate, not because of Harrison, but because his young daughter had been by the place and smelled something. She said, quote, Daddy, please check there. You have to check there. What if that poor girl is inside? And so
how old was his daughter?
I don't know.
That's a full-form sentence.
Yeah. Well, a young daughter, I assume. Like, to me, that's like 7 to 15. I don't know.
No. Young daughter to me is like 3 years old.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, I mean, if she had been by there by herself.
That's true. Like, that's true. Yeah. That's a logical point right there.
Yeah. But he said when he went in, he said it was unbelievably hot in that barn, hotter on the inside than the outside. So we started moving the hay around and there she was. We all jumped back and everyone left the building. Interestingly, the barn was really only a couple miles from the Olenchuk's summer cottage, and it had actually been checked earlier during the 2 weeks of searching, but I couldn't find any clear description of how much of it had been searched, because it was full of unbaled hay, so just loose hay. What's not necessarily the easiest thing to move around, and I suspect they might not have been completely thorough about it.
Yeah.
Or the other possibility is that by the time they searched there, Mary was very newly hidden, and there may have been no odor that led to the later clue that she was there.
Yeah.
So police believed that the killer was familiar with the barn, and they said, again, they've got a thing against hippies, that there had been several hippies camped out on the farm in the weeks prior to her discovery. Mary's remains were transported to the hospital in Waterville, where Dr. Irving Goodoff, who at the time was the deputy chief medical examiner, and he performed the postmortem.
Mm-hmm.
Autopsy results revealed that Mary had been strangled to death, and a piece of lobster rope, which is specific to Maine, because lobsters, I guess, and I didn't know it was a thing. It's a 1/4 inch thick rope that they use specifically with lobsters.
Okay.
Yeah, I assume for the cages and whatnot. My best guess there. I didn't look that up too closely.
Hey, if someone knows what lobster rope is, tell us.
Yep. But there was, again, a piece of lobster rope around her neck that was wrapped around her neck and tightly knotted.
Oh.
She had no other physical injuries to her body, and Dr. Goodoff found traces of black human hair and human skin under her fingernails, and said it indicated that there had been a violent struggle in which Mary had fought back.
Good for you, Chica.
Right. Her clothing was intact. There was, thank goodness, no evidence of sexual assault.
Oh, thank God.
Which was good, but then left police even more confused, because now there's even less of a motive behind her killing.
Yeah, it's just...
yeah. Because now you're really left with no other reason other than just for the heck of it. or something didn't go according to plan.
Some people are fucked up and they do that shit.
You are correct.
No.
So investigators immediately started stepping up their search for this mysterious maroon car. They conducted hundreds of interviews, but months went by without any fresh clues or strong suspects. There was conjecture that Mary's killer was a young person, maybe someone she knew from the beach. Others thought he was older, perhaps a family acquaintance or a fisherman, which would explain the lobster rope. Possibly. So, suspiciously, a year after Mary was found, a fire broke out and completely destroyed the barn.
Oh.
They were never able to determine the cause of the fire, other than just saying it was a suspicious arson. Larry Dwight, his family has owned the Parsons estate since 1870, thinks that the killer came back, because it was a full moon when it burned down. The guy came back on a full moon and burned it down to hide any potential evidence that he could have left behind.
I mean, seems a bit late to be doing that, but...
Seems a little late, but, I mean, if they haven't found any leads then, why not just make it the rest?
Yeah.
So, interestingly, Mary's murder was similar to some other killings that happened in the New Hampshire area a year prior, so the police started exploring that angle as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So, January 29th, 1969, 11-year-old Debbie Horn of Allentown, New Hampshire, was home sick, alone, after falling on the ice and injuring herself.
Oof.
Yeah. And so her mom came home at lunch and found the back door open, and Debbie nowhere to be found. Her body was found later that August in the trunk of an abandoned car 20 miles from home.
Aww.
Then on July 4th, 1969, Debbie's teacher, 29-year-old Luella Marie Blakesley, disappeared. She was found 29 years later in 1998.
What?
Her boyfriend, Robert Briest, was convicted in the 1971 killing of Susan Randall of Concord, New Hampshire, and has been a longtime suspect in Luella and Debbie's murders, but nothing that definitively links him to them.
Any idea what color his hair is?
I did not look that up, but I may have to. It'll be a follow-up episode. Then on November 22nd, 1969, 13-year-old Michelle Wilson from Massachusetts vanished while riding her bike. Child killer Charles Pierce confessed to her murder and led police to her body in March of 1979. Pierce did confess to other child slayings, but never mentioned killing Mary.
What the fuck's going on in Maine?
Right?
Like, I know I made jokes about, like, Washington, but, like, come on. That's a lot of baby killings. And I say baby loosely because, really, anyone under the age of, like, 18 looks like a small child to me lately. I can't help
Accurate.
It.
Accurate.
Yeah. I remember being 15 and feeling like I was really grown up, but now I see 15-year-olds and I'm like, I'm sorry, you're how old? I thought you were 10.
Yeah, does your mom know where you are?
You sure you should be out alone? I have no visual gauge for people's ages anymore. Zero. Nope. Zero gauge.
None. Yeah. So in all three cases, the young girls and women, they all vanished in broad daylight from well-traveled areas. There was one police theory that Mary and Debbie, they both had dogs, and so they may have been lured by their abductors by a ruse of, hey, there's this animal that's hurt.
Oh.
Which, to be honest, like, sorry, Mom, that probably would have worked on me, too.
But thank God it didn't happen because
no kidding.
That's actually a pretty common
thing.
Like, people prey on people like, hey, can you help me find my dog? And I'm just like, it's horrible because before I paid attention to this shit.
Right. Exactly.
Totally would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, as a kid. Yeah. Sorry. I know. We did all the don't talk to strangers shit, and trust me, I don't like talking to people anyway, but...
When it comes to puppy...
Yeah.
I help find.
Lost animals, yeah.
Yeah, any kind of sad critter. Hell, probably even into my early 20s.
Right?
So thank God that that did not happen.
Yeah.
To me. Won't work now. Haha.
Nope.
I've read too many horrifying stories and scared the shit out of myself.
Yeah. No kidding. Unfortunately, that's kind of where Mary's story ends. Ruth Olenchuk, her mom, passed away in 1998. Her father, Peter, passed away in 2000. Both are buried alongside their daughter, Mary, in Arlington National Cemetery. The oldest daughter, Nancy, she legally changed her name to Hillary and passed away from multiple myeloma in May 11th, 2014. Mm. And the remaining daughter, Jane, is around 70. In the post that Blake sent me, it was a Reddit post that kind of started me down the rabbit hole. one of Mary's older cousins actually commented on the post with their thoughts, which was interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so they always thought it was a, quote, lone wolf person that either belonged to or was influenced by the Weatherman movement, which I think you touched on.
Yeah, we talked about that a little. We didn't go too far into it because it was really hard to find information on it.
Yeah.
But it was like the top 10 FBI women series, several of them were related to the Weatherman movement.
Yeah, so interesting little family insight there.
Yeah.
So my thoughts on all of this, again, this is all idle conjecture, speculation, whatnot, as we are very wont to do.
Yes.
If any of our listeners have theories, send them to us. Join us. So my thoughts, whoever killed Mary, I definitely think that they were probably from Maine. They're, again, it's like no one outside of Maine knows what the hell lobster rope is.
Yeah.
They knew where to find a fairly secluded and hidden place in small town Maine where they could leave a dead body somewhere where it wouldn't be found right away. So I'm thinking either a town local or someone who frequented during tourist season enough to be familiar with the area. Mm-hmm. And it made me wonder with the rope that was there, if the killer was actually planning on killing her, like if that was always part of the plan, or did it happen because she fought back? Because they did say she was fairly shy and not super trusting. I don't know, I have a really hard time believing that she would have gotten into a car just nice and quiet with someone that she didn't know. Like, she would have to know the person, or the person knew something to say that would make her trust them.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I wonder how available lobster rope is. Like, is this something that you could just walk into one of the shops? Like, I imagine that for people who were frequenting there as tourists, shopping, not shopping, wow, fishing. I don't really know how the two things, like, swapped there. That fishing was probably a pretty popular pastime, given that, like, it sounds like there were rivers and beaches and stuff. Yeah. So I wonder if there was, like, fishing shops for tourists to go and get stuff, and maybe there was lobster rope there, and it would be super easy to find without having to know what it is. Like, maybe you were just picking up fishing supplies, and it was an easy cover.
That could be. Yeah.
I hope someone is working on this as, like, a cold case.
So this is actually Maine's oldest cold case.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So from the poor Bob Walsh aspect of it, I think very strongly whoever was in the car the morning of August 10th, the person who was outside of the Idalese motel, I think that was probably the killer.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's the vibe I get.
There's just too much coincidence in that for me, and I'm not big on coincidence.
Well, okay, I'm sorry, but... I've driven at 2 a.m., and I've watched people drive at 2 a.m., and you don't stop and idle at an intersection at 2 a.m.
in the 70s.
And you don't drive away slowly at 2 a.m.
No.
You get out of there fast.
Right. And again, like, I drive, like, at least 4 nights a week at 1, 2 a.m. And you're talking back in the 70s. People didn't have phones or shit to distract them.
Or road lights for a lot of it.
Yeah. So,
oh, this I don't know. Drive sounds awful. I would just be freaking myself out. Like, do I put on my high beams? No, I can't put on my high beams because there might be something there. But do I put them on just in case there is something there so I can see it? It would just be that in a circle the entire time.
It's always high beams. You put the high beams on and you risk seeing something creepy because at least you'll see it.
I tend to lean the other direction.
Mm.
No. I tend to lean the, you know what, just go a little bit over the speed limit, and if there's something there, if it's a deer, you're going to see its eyes, so.
Yeah, but the high beams reflect really well off the eyeballs, because I've had a lot of raccoons, this is turning into a weird segue. I have a lot of raccoons that, like, will hide in the ditch by the road and, like, try and scuttle in front of you, so at least if I can see them with the high beams, I have a lot of time to slow down.
Maybe I've just been getting really lucky that I haven't had any problems.
Yeah,
because I've never hit anything. But oh man, I'm just gonna not drive at night. Period. It's better for me.
Fair enough. So my speculation too is I think that Bob and his friend stumbled across the kidnapper mid-hiding Mary's body in the barn when they came back to drop their stuff off, and that the rustling he heard when he turned to look back was the killer running into the woods. And I think that the killer was probably hiding there when they left and when Bob turned to look at it, just like give the woods one last look.
Yeah.
That the killer saw him turn around and thought, maybe he saw me.
Yeah, so then he went and snuck back by the motel.
Uh-huh. Yep. So, again, I was like, big jump here, but maybe the killer was thinking if he could take care of a potential witness, but then decided that the risk of doing so was greater than just driving away. If the killer was local, he likely knew that the motel was run by Bob's family.
Yeah.
So, knew that the family lived there, and it's tourist season, so there's a lot of people there, so the odds of getting caught. And Bob had his
friend with him, and it was probably pretty well lit, because it was a pool at 2 a.m.
Yep. Ugh. So, I'm thinking, A, we have a local that skipped town not long after. B, we got someone who lived close radius to the town, but maybe not in it. Or C, it was a tourist who knew the area pretty well. Those are my three guesses here.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I'm on board with what you were saying. I'm trying to think if there would be any other situation. But the fact that she was getting into a car and that there was someone who saw her getting into a car does, like, lean towards a male still being the killer. I was just trying to think if there was any way it could be, like, I don't know, another local child or something. Because sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Or maybe a child was used to lure her. Maybe there was a kid that was someone's parent. It was like, oh, well, I know this person from the beach. Well, we could give you a ride home. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know why she would have accepted a ride when she was, again, less than 200 yards.
Well, and she had the bike.
Yeah.
So like, she would have had to return the bike. I don't know. It's a weird one.
A football field away?
I have no idea. Oh my god. I don't know. Let's find out.
So, 200 is like one lap around the football field.
How long of a walk is 200 yards? 2 minutes. It's not a lap around a football field.
Yeah.
So there
would have been no reason for her to accept a ride home.
Okay, for instance, 1 mile is 1,760 yards.
Right.
So, like, this was very small. How many blocks is it's 2 blocks away?
Yeah, so she could probably see home.
Yeah,
from there.
Woof. Ugh. I don't know. Poor Mary.
Poor Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I'm still angry about the chemical dumping.
That's fair. Like,
My sister got me riled up yesterday because she was telling me she was watching a documentary about sea environmental issues. So it's right on the top of my mind. We all need to stop killing things just for our own enjoyment. It's terrible. I'm talking about the Earth, but also other people.
Also other people.
Yeah.
The song applies to many situations.
Climate change is real. Climate change is real. Climate change is real.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as I said, after Mary's body was found, the case pretty much immediately ran into a brick wall. There were no leads, no letters, no phone calls, nothing that gave the police any suspects or direction to go off of. The case is still open to this day, so I'm going to insert our little please contact disclaimer. If you have any information, please contact the Maine State Police Major Crimes Unit South at 1-800-228-0857. While you may think what you know or have heard isn't important, that little bit of information could be the missing piece that helps solve a puzzle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is the story of Mary Catherine Olenchuk, who, again, is Maine's oldest cold case.
Yeah, I think that was a good one to end on. That was a wild ride.
Yeah, I was hoping that would be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Well done. I like it.
Do you want some jokes?
I think we need some jokes.
I need some jokes. Let's get some jokes. You know, 50 episodes in, I finally figured out that looking up jokes on my phone is a lot quieter than typing on my computer.
Hey, it's all about the learning.
It only took 1 year. Why did Adele cross the road?
I don't know.
To say hello from the other side.
God damn it. I knew it was going to be something like that.
Hello from the other side.
I was like, what's the line in her song?
It wasn't rolling in the deep.
All I could think of was, like, the rain portion of her song.
I think that's Rolling in the Deep, which is a different song.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just watched that music video. Let's see. You know, time flies like an arrow, but fruit flies like bananas.
Yes, they do. I also like bananas.
Banana.
Banana, na, 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 na.
Banana, na, 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 na. Denim, denim, denim. Oh, wait. Okay, so what kind of pants do Mario and Luigi wear? Denim, denim, denim. That was my sister's best friend's favorite joke growing up.
That's pretty good. I haven't heard that one before. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I am.
I am who?
Don't you even know who you are?
Oh my goodness. No, ask my therapist.
Why do fish live in salt water?
I do not know.
Because pepper makes them sneeze.
Oh, that's cute. The concept of a fish sneezing is cute. Just reminds me of Dory from Finding Nemo.
Right.
What do you use to cut a Roman emperor's hair?
What?
Caesars.
Oh, God.
It's stupid.
Why do... I found a lot of fish jokes.
Okay.
Why do fish like to eat worms?
I don't know.
Because they get hooked on them.
Okay. I was going to go with, like, they're tired of seafood or something like that, but hooked on them is better. You know, I was having trouble sleeping in my bed. So instead, I started sleeping in our fireplace. Now I sleep like a log.
Yeah. I was going to say, I bet that's toasty.
I certainly wouldn't be cold there.
Nope. I don't know why that makes it America. Oh, got it. I just answered my own joke. What do you call a bee that comes from America?
You tell me.
It's stupid. It's a USB.
Oh.
That took me longer than I care to admit to figure out.
That's okay. You remember the time I told you a joke and I said, I don't get it, can you please tell me? And then the moment I said it out loud, I immediately got it.
Yes, yeah. I do remember that.
What does a clock do when it's hungry?
It chimes? I don't know.
It goes back for seconds.
Ah. I was going to say, the cuckoo pops out and it screams at me.
I actually like cuckoo clocks, so long as they're like too. Not the weird, like, crazy ones. Like, it has to be, like, the pretty music and an actual little bird that chirps at you.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the motivational poster I need in my life. It's okay if you fall apart sometimes. Tacos do, and we still love them.
Oh, true facts.
Mm-hmm. Love tacos.
In fact, I prefer when they fall apart, because then I can mix it all together.
That's just called a taco salad.
You're right. That's what I like. I'm on a salad kick because I feel squishy.
Salad.
And also I like salad.
Yeah.
So, two birds, one stone. Yeah. What's the world's tallest building?
I don't think it's the Empire State Building. No. I think it's something in Dubai.
It's the library. It has the most stories.
Oh my goodness. Okay, but now I need to find out which one's actually the tallest, because I'm pretty sure it's in Dubai. Burj Khalifa, where are you at? Dubai! I was right!
Hey!
Ha-ha!
Yeah, isn't that one the one that's, like, almost in airspace? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
They've like got some wild buildings tall. Over there.
Yeah.
Wild, wild, wild things. The kind of place that I would not go to the top story of that building.
Nope. What do you call a bear without any teeth?
A gummy bear?
A gummy bear.
Gummy bear. Oh, I got into trouble at the park today. People told me to stop arranging the squirrels in order of height. I felt very critter-sized.
Why did the math book look so sad?
Because it's a math book, and it knows no one wants to read it at the time, but then they realize that the people are going to be super interested in math later, but it's too late. They're too busy.
I mean, I would just settle for it because it had so many problems.
Did I go to psychoanalyst on that one?
You went a little deep there.
That's because that's how I feel about math books. I hated them when I was a kid. Absolutely my worst topic. Then I got older and I went to college and I only had like two math classes and I loved them. And now I never do math because I don't have any time.
I still don't like math.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I wasn't bad at it. I just didn't like it.
I was bad at it and didn't like it when I, like, high school and below.
Oh, yeah.
I was good at it once I hit calculus. Anything fractions, I hate fractions. So much.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah, not a big fan of math, but I love chemistry and physics.
Ooh, yes.
Doesn't make sense,
I really enjoyed chemistry and physics.
Didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Both very math-based, but whatever.
Rachel McAdams' height is 5'4". Which is the average height of an American female. She's really? A mean girl. Mean. The mean girl is the mean. It's a math joke.
That was a joke on many levels. Jokes by Lauren.
Do you know what the height of stupidity is?
No.
Two bald people fighting over a comb.
Nah. I mean... Yeah. Again, more jokes about fishes. What do librarians take with them when they go fishing?
Okay, no, I really have no idea. You somehow mixed your library joke plus a fish joke, and I don't get it.
Bookworms.
Ah, okay. Okay. Oh. Oh, that has some horrifying implications.
It does. Don't think too deep on it.
Oh, God.
Surface only.
Do you know why so many plumbers are afraid of heights?
Is it a joke about plumber cracks? Because I feel like it should be.
It's not.
Oh, okay.
They're afraid of plunging to their death. Plunging. I, too, would be afraid of that.
Yep.
in both definitions.
Yep.
Okay, what is it? Because you're giggling over there silently.
It's stupid, but it's funny. Why does the Norwegian Navy have barcodes on the side of their ships?
So they can Scandinavian?
So when they come back to port, they can Scandinavian.
Scandinavian! I like that one.
Oh, it's stupid but funny.
It's wonderful. I somehow found all of the, like, height and math jokes.
And I found all the weird fish jokes.
How do pirates measure their height? In yards.
Why couldn't the toilet paper cross the road?
Why?
It got stuck in a crack.
Oh, you were stuck on the plumber thing. Oh, goodness.
Have we done enough jokes to end our season?
I think that one wins the season at the moment.
So many jokes.
So many jokes. I can't believe Coda stayed, like, quiet this entire recording session.
I'm impressed, other than her little sleep woofs.
Mm-hmm.
Sleepy pupper. That's all for this season. Thanks for listening in, and check back on May 30th, 2021 for Season 2. If you miss our spookies during the break, come visit us on social media for more great puns and spooky conversations. You can find us at Wait to Panic Podcast on Instagram and Wait to Panic on Facebook. If you have a story to share, send it to us in an email at waittopanicpodcast@gmail.com for the chance to be included in Season 2. Make good choices, and remember,
wait to panic. Woohoo! Woo! Season 1 done!
Season 1 is done!